Hi, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight. Just so you know, I'm recording this hearing via audio and video. It will be up on our website, hopefully tomorrow. Please mute yourselves when you're not talking. I have the ability to mute you, and all of the commissioners have the ability to mute you, so please be cognizant of that. Any background noise is extremely distracting. Are there any members of the press present tonight? Okay, hearing none, I think it's okay to go ahead and get started, David.
Okay. All right, I'm calling to order this Four Point Channel Landmark District Commission hearing, public hearing to order at 6 p.m. on April 8, 2021. You can participate in this hearing by going to our Zoom meeting link found on the public notice page or by calling 929-205-6099 and entering meeting ID number 861-8552-9275#. You can also submit your written comment to via email to fortpointldc@boston.gov. So today the commission will be holding a public hearing to review design review applications in accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law. We are conducting this meeting online. To ensure public access to the deliberations of the Fort Point Channel Landmark District Commission, the public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on applications and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can send your questions to staff via email at fortpointldc@boston.gov. And I'll repeat these instructions when we open public comment. So tonight, commissioners present are John Karoff and Lynn Smilage. Is Tom there?
I don't see Tom.
No, okay. All right, and then myself, Baraducci. All right, so the first item is application 21.0481, and that is 22 Boston Wharf Road, and the proposed work is at the roof, construct a stair, head house, and roof deck with metal picket railings and acoustic metal panel wall. Oh.
David, I think that's the wrong agenda.
The wrong agenda, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all okay. Right. I have it up here on the screen.
All right. Yeah. As I'm reading, I think that sounds awfully familiar. Oh, I see what I did here. All right. I opened the wrong folder. All right. Do you have it up here?
Yep. It's up here on my screen.
All right. Not online, though. All right. Still don't have that, so let me open up my I'm not seeing it here. All right, so bear with me here while I call this up. So I'm calling, I think this is the one here. Mary, I'm not seeing, can't quite get my hands on it right now. So I don't see yours either on the screen. So
can I say it? Is that okay?
Yeah, okay, wait a minute. All right, I've got it here. Pulled it up this second. So let me get it on a larger screen here. Sorry about that. Okay, we're in business. So the first item on the agenda is application 21.0754. That's 253 Summer Street. And the work is... proposed work is ratify a patio expansion, including the installation of pavers, planters, lighting, furniture, and associated landscape. This is a violation, actually. It's not an application. And the violation number is VIO 0.21 0.009. So is the owners of that property here to talk about it?
Yes, this is Stephen Leaf with Summer Melcher SPE LLC ownership, and we have brought along our specialist with Epsilon on behalf of the tenant, Lolita Fort Point, to help rectify the issue. Thank you for your time.
This is Chris Jameson on here with Lolita Fort Point.
And Doug Kelleher with Epsilon Associates is here, as is my colleague Aaron Doherty from Epsilon. So I'll just, again, this is Doug Kelleher with Epsilon. I'll just make some brief introductory remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Aaron, who will go through the bulk of the slide presentation. As the chair noted, this is in response to a violation notice. The property owner received a notice of violation of the expanded patio a couple months ago, and to their credit, moved quickly to engage us to file the proper application, which you'll be seeing tonight, to sort of give you a sense of exactly what has in fact been installed. Some of you may recall back in, I think it was 2018, the original patio was before the commission for a couple different hearings. It was ultimately approved and was constructed. So with that, I'll turn it over to Aaron, and like I said, we'll go through some of the slides here.
Thank you, Doug. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having us here tonight to present this project. As Doug mentioned, this project is an expansion of an existing patio at 253 Summer Street that you had reviewed back in 2018. So I'm going to run through some images of the existing site and details on the materials and design of the patio extension that was constructed. And then we're glad to answer any of your questions, but please feel free to jump in if you have questions along the way. If we can go to the next slide. So for orientation, I think we're all familiar with the location of the building, but this is 253 Summer Street with frontage along Summer Street and Melcher Street, but also along the channel itself. Next slide. The property itself was built in 1902 as part of the Necco factory complex and was designed by Boston Wharf Company staff architect Morton Safford. Like many buildings in the district, it's a classical revival factory building constructed of brick with sandstone trim. And it is prominently located at the gateway to the district. And as I mentioned, the west elevation of the building does front the Fort Point channel. And the patio that we'll be looking at is in that area of the building right along the channel. You can go to the next slide. In our research of the building, we found that this area to the south of the building along the channel where the patio is located was not historically open space. The area held some wood frame sheds that were associated with the factory complex. And you can see those one-story shed in the historic photograph on the right. And then on the left in the Atlas map, it's shaded in yellow with a blue outline just to the south of the building. The shed itself extended a bit further south than the adjacent buildings and extended across the end of Necco Court, which you can see a little bit more clearly if we can go to the next slide. So the photograph on the right is facing west on Necco Court, looking toward the Fort Point Channel. And you can see at the end of Necco Court, there is that wood frame shed, which comes across the end of the street. And the patio extension that was constructed occupies a portion of the footprint of where that wood frame shed used to be. If we can go to the next slide. This is the project site prior to construction of the patio extension. The original patio that you approved is just to the right of the frame, to the right of those wood beams that you see in the photograph. Next slide. So this is the patio extension in plan view with the original patio to the left. So it's approximately 21 by 22 feet with 6 tables and chairs. There are 2 entries to the patio. The main entrance is on the left side of your screen coming from the original patio, and there's a step down to this patio extension. And then there is a second entrance from Necco Court. You'll see it's marked ADA entrance. It's an at-grade entrance that comes onto the patio between 2 of the planters. So there are no associated railings. It's just an at-grade accessible entrance. If you can go to the next slide. So the patio materials were all selected to be consistent with the industrial character of the district and also for their ability to be removed in the off season. So the east and west edges of the patio are lined with steel planters with a weathered finish, and the plantings are a mix of ornamental grasses. The south edge of the patio is it's a bit lower, and it's just lined with some reclaimed wood beams, which tie in with the wood pergola that was constructed with the original patio. The lighting fixtures are small string lights, and those extend from the pergola structure out to some narrow steel posts at the south edge of the new patio. So like the planters, the lighting can all be removed in the off season. Next slide. The patio area was previously just black asphalt, as we saw in the before construction photo. And now there are some pavers that have been installed, permeable pavers to allow for drainage. They are kind of a red brick color with some variation. And this catalog cut shows the pavers laid out in kind of a herringbone pattern on the patio itself. As you'll see, the pavers are just laid in a simple running bond pattern, so similar to the brickwork of the surrounding buildings. Next slide. So this, for furnishings, there are simple teak wood tables and folding chairs. On the right, you see the layout of the table. So it's, as I mentioned, 6 tables and associated chairs. And these are also lightweight enough to be easily moved around as needed. Next slide. There are also 3 patio umbrellas available for days when shade is needed. The site is fairly exposed. These are simple 3-meter square umbrellas, bamboo frame with kind of a light tan umbrella shade. Next slide. So this is the completed work as viewed looking north toward that original patio, which you see in the background. The intent here is really to be in keeping with the character of the district and also to limit any permanent physical impacts to the surrounding buildings. So as I'd mentioned, all of the furniture and planters are movable for the off season. So that concludes the images that we have to present. If you have any questions, we're glad to answer them. Thank you.
I have several here. Do you have a plan view of this showing, you know, that pulls it out a little further, that shows it in relationship to the building and to the GE building on the other side and the alleyway, just to see how far it does protrude out into that that open alleyway?
So I don't believe we have one in the set, but Mary, if you want to back up to the plan view, maybe I can offer a little more orientation.
The layout plan. Oh, there it is.
Yeah. So this doesn't give me the context as much as I'd like to see it.
I have some pictures, David, if you'd like to see those.
Well, because what I'm trying to figure out here is the 21 feet that you have of the extension. Is that the full width of the alley?
It is not the full width, no.
All right.
If I may answer, this is Chris Shaman. It's approximately half the width of the alley.
Half the width, all right. So I guess the things that that concern the commission that would be violations is the changing gray for one thing, and that does not seem that it's a temporary setup. That's pretty permanent sounding. You know, even though you can take the planters away, you're certainly not going to take all those pavers away and all of whatever you have to retain the grade. I assume the you have wood timbers, did you say, that are retaining the grades to allow for the pavers to be put in? What's making the pavers sort of at a level level platform? Because I'm sure the road is not right. The surface that it's sitting on is not level, correct?
So, Chris, jump in here if I'm
okay. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Whatever. Yeah. So there's the timbers right there are what allows us to change the grade. So the patio was graded flat, which caused us to reduce it by about 16 inches over the picture that you previously saw, which had the asphalt sloped up to the harbor walk. So in one of the previous slides, you saw the entire asphalt blacktop sloped up to the harbor walk. These timbers were emplaced to, as you said, you know, to sort of retain the pavers that delineate the harbor walk side of this. And then we dropped the patio side about 16 inches to make it almost flat so that we could put tables and chairs there.
All right. And when was this done?
This was done in April and May of last year. And, you know, if I may for a second, you know, I think we were in front of the commission in 18 or 17, 18 about building, you know, the patio and, you know, when COVID hit, the restaurant shut down, and then the city announced that they would allow us to open some temporary patio space. You know, I remembered that we were in front of you guys. I really, you know, at that point wasn't thinking about all the various approvals we had to jump through. You know, we tried to do our homework with DEP to try and figure out, you know, what we had to do with pavers. And our goal last summer was just to get open because, you know, as everybody is more than aware, you know, restaurants were in a pretty tough spot. So, you know, we thought we were clear with DEP, and we didn't really think to circle back to this group. And that was, you know, 100% my oversight, and I own that. We did the work as fast as we could under what we thought were the regulations that applied. And you know, we got open for the summer and we were able to operate it. So, you know, it became known to us in the middle of last year, obviously, that we had missed a bunch of steps in the approval process. At that point, you know, we went back and we sat down with Epsilon and with the landlord and said, you know what, hey, we just kind of rushed this thing through. We need to go back and, you know, do this process right. And I think that's what's brought us to, you know, CONCOM last night, to your board today, and, you know, to the DEP process to say, okay, you know, let's kind of make sure we go back and we solicit the feedback we need to. And if we need to make changes, we'll make changes. But, you know, this was something that we really just kind of did in the heat of what last summer was for restaurants. And, you know, here we are today to try and figure out, you know, if we can leave it or if there are changes that need to be made.
And so you said you are going to go before CONCOM?
We had that meeting yesterday, last night. Okay. We had a hearing last night. We spoke through a variety of issues. As I understand it, that was continued. The commission asked us to have some additional conversations with the city. So I believe that they have continued that.
Did they weigh in at all on the grading of this and how the change in grade may affect water distribution and flow? It's certainly at the times of, you know, when flooding occurs here, did they not? I mean, that would have been right in their wheelhouse.
I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but what we did is we took black asphalt and we converted that to permeable pavers or porous pavers. So I think that was generally appreciated and a positive, in a positive direction. I believe they wanted our group to have some further conversations with the city about barriers. And this is way outside of my wheelhouse, so I'm not going to talk about that. But they had just asked Eric Rexford of Epsilon to talk with the city about some flooding measures. And beyond that, I really don't know what all of that means.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, I think that is something that I would like to see that the commission would pay attention to, and that is, how is this interrupting the existing pattern flow of water and drainage in this area? Obviously, permeable pavers is one thing, but that's a very slow percolation of water.
Right.
And it doesn't take care of surface water that would be flowing over that area. So that's a bit of a concern. And I think, the other thing that, and I assume this is why you presented that wooden structure. Maybe this is the wrong building. Was that that wood structure? Was that the channel center or channel bar that used to be down in that area?
No, that was a ways further down the channel.
That was a ways. Okay.
Yeah, that was a bit further down there. Okay. So the reason we went with the beams that you see as a retaining wall is, as you remember, we've been in front of this, this commission in the spring of 18, and the sort of the beams and the general tenor of the patio was approved. And so we said, okay, if we have to retain 18 inches of soil, let's do it with something that has already been approved as appropriate mm-hmm. for the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that's why we put the beams where we did.
Yeah.
And I think, our gut feeling was that if, anything is better than black asphalt.
Right.
And if we were to put permeable pavers down, then it's at least 1% step in the right direction. So,
right.
That was where my head was at least. And, a lot was going on last year, but we just tried to do what we thought was right. And,
I think one of the things
we're here to talk through it.
Yeah. I think, had you come before us, one of the things that I would have asked and wanted to pay attention to was, and this is, irregardless of the fact that there was a wooden structure there in the history of this site, how is the view through that alleyway out to the channel, and was there a view of the channel from that alley? And now with your rise in the elevations, is that now blocking the identity of the edge of that channel? I mean, because I think that's one of the things the guidelines talked about was, as mm-hmm. these streets and alleys, extend out to the perimeter of the district, that those mm-hmm. view corridors be maintained, that they not be blocked off. And that would be one thing that I think is the one of the nicest features here, is that if you can look through that alleyway and actually see the channel, that would be a sort of a nice historic reference and landmark. And I don't know if now this planter is blocking that.
Okay. No, valid. Yeah. I think if you'll remember when we did the patio work back in 2018, we raised the harbor walk. So there's a concrete harbor walk there that we actually raised, to the highest point on the channel in an attempt to, mitigate any kind of flooding up Necco Court. And then we sloped it down to the approved grade of the GE one. So, you've kind of got this kind of concrete mass that exists in front of all of the nice rock and the rip that's on the edge of the channel. But there are some of the wispy grasses that we've planted in the planters certainly protrude above that.
Right.
That concrete harbor walk, without a doubt, that's very clear in any picture. So if that's a consideration, then yes, you've seen some greenery and some plants that are above that concrete harbor walk.
Yeah. All right. And then another thought or another comment was, and I know the picture that you showed of the side view of the patio with the one that had the umbrellas and such, that looks like it was a picture taken shortly after installation, because what I'm seeing in this picture, and I'm not seeing in the pictures of today, all of these poles that are sticking up that are your lighting and whatever else is all connected to it are nice and plumb, but now in reality they're all crooked and bent over and looked pretty disheveled and messy.
Our goal and our intention, obviously we didn't really want to do anything until we got through this process with you, but obviously we're not happy with that. If you see what we do, we certainly care about how things look. Our goal is to completely sort of rethink that idea and replace those. Mm-hmm. Those were very much just temporary, sleeved in to get some lights up there last summer. So in no way, shape or form are we intending to leave that, but we wanted to come in front of you and say, hey, look, if we need some lights out there, how would you prefer that we do it?
Okay. And this, I know this is, these alleys are not public, they're private. Who's the owner of the alleyway that this patio is over?
This is the property of Summer Melcher SBE LLC.
Okay. So you obviously gave permission to do this, to have them put the patio over it. Or are
yeah,
you-
well, that's kind of the one I do want to layer on top of Chris's comments earlier, which is, you know, as an ownership group, we are very respectful of this commission and its opinions. And the violation notice struck us as a bit of a surprise. So we got involved quickly to understand where the misstep was. And we appreciate everyone's time here and want to make sure we do this by the book. So we're mm-hmm. prepared to, you know, make whatever adjustments as necessary.
All right. And what are the remaining agencies that you need to go before to get sign off on? BPDA, did you say?
Aaron, could you help me with that? I'm not entirely sure.
It's DEP.
DEP.
And yeah. The Conservation Commission. And
just the DEP and Conservation. Okay.
Right.
And so Conservation weighed in already, but are you going to go back to them?
Yes, that meeting was last night, and that was continued.
All right.
You know, after a very lengthy discussion.
Yeah. Can I ask what their emphasis was? Did they focus on any one particular thing?
So I wasn't at that meeting, but maybe Steve can briefly summarize what the content was.
Yeah. My recollection really was that they wanted to have us follow up with regard to the city's long-term vision for flood sustainability throughout the channel, just to make sure that these improvements, because it, you know, I think what Chris mentioned earlier is the permeable pavers are actually a positive. The height of the harbor walk was not changed at all. So from a drainage perspective, it was it was better than having asphalt there. The only question is if there are plans for further flood mitigation or prevention measures, are we doing anything to inhibit that?
Right. Yeah, that's what I kind of thought. So, all right. So that they'll flush that out. And I think, you know, I think our commission would like to, you know, hear their comments on that, because I have a concern about that too. I mean, what I'm getting at is that, whether, you know, there are a lot of issues that are fall into place here as far as why this is not a great spot for an extended patio. And the view corridor is certainly one of them. Material wise, it looks like you used materials that probably would have been, you know, approved by us. And, you know, the Corten planters and all that, and the plant material and like the wood timbers as well. But it, you know, we may have had others, there may be suggestions that we could make to you about how to improve the look of this and how to make it look more integrated, perhaps. The other thing is, you know, we kind of discourage, certainly we've discouraged in the past applicants that have wanted to put, you know, large screen, flat screen TVs out in their outdoor areas for, you know, the visual disruption plus the sound and noise that would come out of it. I understand that there are speakers out here as well, and have not been out there when this is in operation, but I don't know what that would sound like. Is the sound carrying? You know, it's probably something that we would have wanted to look at and review as well. So I guess I'm going to open it up to the other commissioners to hear what their thoughts are before we kind of, you know, make a suggestion as to what we think, how this should be handled at this point. So
I just wonder if this should be continued until we have more insight into Conservation's recommendations and the flood control.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I wanted to hear from you guys first, but yeah, it sounds like we have a lot of questions that need answering, and we need to hear some of these other agencies, how they're gonna weigh in on the environmental impact of this, essentially, on this in this sensitive area that's prone to flooding.
So I would just be concerned that any suggestions we made tonight might be moot.
No, I agree. Do you have are you on the schedule for any for these hearings right now?
Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Conservation Commission hearing was continued to their next regularly scheduled meeting.
And I believe that's the case.
They're once a month, is that what they are? So, all right. Mary, do we open this up to the public for comment as a violation?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's, I think, unless Commissioner Karoff, do you have any comments at all on this?
I guess the only comment that I would have is more of a question. I'm seeing, particularly in this image, I'm also seeing some conduit and what may appear to be a security camera. I'm just wondering if that was part of this installation as well.
Along the side of the building, you mean?
Yeah, above that umbrella on the right-hand side in the corner of the building, it looks like.
Right, yeah.
I believe that is
camera? Yeah.
Building security that's been there for over a decade at this point.
Yeah, we didn't put any conduit on the outside of the building there. We were very careful to run everything under.
All right. Okay, well, with that, I am, let me read in, or Mary, do you have that script for the public comment?
Yes. Can I add just one more comment from the Conservation Commission hearing last night?
Yep.
So the commission staff actually recommended as part of that hearing that the commission require the restoration of the 93 square feet closest to the channel. Again, the commission didn't make any sort of determination. They opted to continue it, but that was another item that was discussed.
When you say restoration, you're talking about the walkway?
Correct.
All right. Well, we'll hear more from them on that then. So let's open it up to the public. So members of the public now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on the application and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at fortpointldc@boston.gov.
Okay. I see Steve Hollinger would like to make a comment. Steve, yep. You can go ahead. You'll have 2 minutes.
Hey, hi, everyone. My main objection is is unrelated to landmarks. It's the expansion of development rights in a flood pathway that's critical to the survival of the historic district. That's a widely acknowledged flood pathway. And BPDA told us they were planning a deployable barrier on Necco Court. And I think that's all being considered by CONCOM, like's been suggested. That's my main objection. I just want to go over a few comments that were made about it formerly not being public space. It became open space. Technically, it's Chapter 91 open space. And it's also in the 100 acres plan as open space or a combination of spaces. Originally it was a building, and then it became open space in the 100 acres plan. The comment, we thought we were clear with DEP. My understanding is the prior program manager denied the expansion concept on multiple occasions. DEP got a new program manager about a year ago, and that program manager may have hinted that things would be clear, but that's certainly not the case at DEP. They're reviewing this project in the same way. My main objection in terms of landmarks is the comment that wispy grasses is the only obstruction. We've been working on view corridors dating back to 1997 in the Seaport, and nearly every view corridor has been compromised, including looking out from Sleeper Street toward the harbor, looking into the district from the harbor, looking out where District Hall is from West Service Road, and so on. Everyone's been compromised. This is one of the few last remaining view corridors that brings the water into the district, and also from the USPS property and the Four Point Channel looks deep into the district. The obstructions include the wall itself is elevated to a height above the harbor walk. The planters are removable. I don't mind removable objects, but there are permanent obstructions. And I've heard the claim that cars already obstruct the patio. Cars are not permanent obstructions, and long-term, this may end up being a public pathway to the Harbor Walk. That's how I would envision it long-term. So that's my entire comment. I object to the obstruction of a view corridor that's well respected in our district for years by painters, by everyone who loves the district. And thanks for the time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else lined up, Mary?
I don't see anybody else. Oh, I'm sorry. Sarah McCammond is raising her hand. Sarah, you can go ahead. You'll have 2 minutes.
Thank you, the commission, for the opportunity to speak. Sarah McCammon, Fort Point resident. Just wanted to clarify my understanding from CONCOM's recommendation, the 93 square feet in what they consider the waterfront area is the patio itself. So I just wanted to clarify that, that is the way it was, I understood. And so perhaps that could be clarified. And also, I just want to remind the commission that, the GE went through a very extensive rehabilitation, which the mayor at the time had to intervene for the pedestrian bridge, which is right behind the site. So, and thinking about view corridors in and out of the district, it's an important gateway for us as we're coming across the Summer Street Bridge, coming back into Fort Point, and that view corridor right where the patio extension that's being proposed for approval, it is, and I would just encourage, as the chair said, to kind of look more at those view corridors, and then the applicant has been asked to have conversations about what kind of flood barrier would be available at this vulnerable area to prevent flooding into the historic buildings behind it and into the street network of that alleyway as well. So just a couple quick points.
Thank you. Great. Thank you. Any other people or emails come in?
I don't see anybody else raising their hand. And I don't believe I have any additional emails, but let me just double check because I accidentally closed my browser window. No, I don't have any additional emails, so I think it's okay to close public comment.
Okay. So I think it looks like we will rule on having this be a continuance because there are other players that we need to weigh in on this, and we need to hear what their comments are and their positions, particularly as it has to do with the flooding and such of this area. One of the things I also want to see when you come back to us is I want to see a better plan view of this extension in relationship to the surrounding area, because I do want to see how this impact circulation and public circulation in particular through that alley out to the Harbor Walk. All that's important, and wouldn't want this to be any kind of a barrier for that. Now, just to get back to what, I kind of understand the crisis that restaurants were in last year at this time, and the need for desperately to find outdoor space, because that was the only way you were going to be able to serve diners. And certainly living in the South End, I see how the city relaxed a lot of the regulations and allowed these restaurants to take some parking spaces and put tables out there. But all of that is very temporary. And I can see how you would maybe have wanted to expand your seating since you couldn't have as many diners inside. But this is a very permanent footprint that you put down here. It is not a temporary thing to such that when things do, resort back to where they were, and hopefully they will, and your restaurant is able to be at full capacity, where does this extra seating then stand? I doubt very much that you're going to be willing to take those seats away. Whereas here in the South End or other neighborhoods, they probably won't be parking as many or putting as many tables into the parking areas. So that was kind of a concern that I had. I certainly understand the motivation behind it, but the way you went about it in terms of the permanence of it was something that I think we question. So
yeah, if I may just for a moment on that, because I think this is important, and I don't want for any second to, you know, to think that we were just trying to take something we conjured up in our heads last April and now make it permanent. If you remember back in 2018, we had made reference to the fact that we did intend to come back and permit an additional small patio. And it was nothing more than sort of reference as you approved the deck. You know, we had engaged surveyors and you know, we did all the sort of legwork to put a package together, you know, to get this done through proper channels that we anticipated coming to you, you know, last spring. You know, before last spring happened, COVID happened. And so right. The world just kind of ended. So we were, you know, again, just sort of, I didn't really think it through. We had done a bunch of legwork on it. We knew what it would take to build it. We just built it. And, you know, I fully intended to kind of come to you guys afterwards, but it was just it was a spur of the moment thing that we knew we had a plan for. And we said, you know what, if the city's okay with it, we're just going to do this. And we thought we did it the right way. And, you know, very clearly did not. And I accept full responsibility for it. But this was not sort of a COVID temporary patio that we're trying to now flip permanent. Our intention was always to do this, you know, the proper way with these materials and come to you and get this done. It just got lost in the shuffle last year. So.
The timing was, the timing was what really was the, the catalyst. So,
Chris, there's probably, sorry to interrupt. This is Steve again. There's probably one thing worth mentioning, which is when all the upgrades were done in conjunction with the work next door with GE, we were asked to create a barrier between Necco Court and the Harbor Walk just for vehicle safety, keeping things separate from the pedestrians. And I believe that the last iteration of that had a raised planter pretty much going across the majority of Necco Court. So I think, you know, as far as a view and what we ultimately settle on, we just need to keep in mind that something will have to come here to just for safety reasons. And I think
what agency asked for that?
Chris, do you remember if that was a...
Offhand, I don't. And I do remember a couple of public comments about, you know, being concerned about people kind of on the edge of the Harbor Walk. I'd have to go back. And Jeff Leon, we may be able to dig back into our records and find that. I don't remember offhand. But people were asking for and requesting some barrier on the sides of the Harbor Walk just for sort of pedestrian protection.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, it's... people's opinion and agency's opinion would matter in terms of the hierarchy of this placement of these planters. So, all right. So I think we will have a continuance on this, and whether or not you'll have the information and materials together for our next monthly meeting, you know, I don't know. If you can do that, then great. But bear in mind, you have to have the materials to the staff, you know, ahead of time. I think it's 2 weeks, Mary, typically. So
we can certainly create them on our table. It is the CONCOM meeting prior to your next scheduled meeting, and I guess that's the only question I have. Because Aaron, or whoever, are we scheduled on the next CONCOM meeting?
I believe so. I don't know the date offhand, but I would expect it would fall before.
Okay, great. As long as the order works, we can put together anything you need before that date. That's fine.
Okay. And then one other another comment. I know Steve Hollinger, you mentioned about the BPDA and their sort of how they viewed this end of the alleyway and this part of the site. Have you gone before them at all, or have they weighed in on any of this?
No, not. I mean, BPDA's requirement that this be public open space probably would allow a patio, as far as I know. I mean, through as long as it's approved by DEP through the Chapter 91 license, I don't think that would be an objection. So I don't see that as an issue. And I haven't gone before BPDA. I have gone before CONCOM. Went before CONCOM last night to talk about the flooding issues. That's about it.
All right. That I would be surprised if the BPDA sort of classifies that as a public space, that they wouldn't then want a private entity to sort of take it over. But nonetheless, if it's an agency you need to have, you know, presentation made before, then great. Otherwise, you know, we'll adhere to DEP and CONCOM. So, all right. So we will call for a continuance, and you know, you can coordinate with Mary in terms of the timing of when you'd like to come back to us.
We need to vote on that?
Oh, I don't know, Mary, do we?
Yes, somebody needs to make a motion.
Okay. I'll make such a motion to continue this violation hearing.
All right, and the second?
I will second it, thank you.
All right, so, well, Lynn Smilage, what's your vote?
Yes.
Right. John Carra?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you all for your time.
Yep. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, everyone.
All right, let's see here. Next is the first design review application, or the only design review application, is number 21.0709. And that is 33 and 41 Farnsworth Street. And the proposed work is remove select deteriorated fire shutter pins at areas where fire shutter pins have previously been removed, install new brick, see additional items under administrative review. So, all right, well, this is the list that we've got here. So is the applicant, if they're ready, they can get started.
Matt Wessling here from Wessling Architects. Thank you for your time tonight. Yes, Mary has up the photos that I submitted as part of this. This is the rear alley of 3341 Farnsworth Street.
Yeah.
So the only thing we're looking to do is mainly take off ones that are either a safety concern, that are doing damage to the surrounding masonry, or have been previously partially removed. If you could move to the next slide. This is a different view about halfway down the buildings, looking back in the opposite direction. Could you go to the next slide? Yeah. And so here's an example. This is actually at the joint between 33 and 41, that tall vertical line in the center of the frame. To the right, you'll see a bunch of red circles where previous fire shutter pins have been removed. Not sure when that took place, but it just kind of happened over the years, I suppose. There were different levels of restoration done at this building, I assume, just from the look of the brick and the mortar. But these ones were infilled with pretty closely matching brick to the building, fortunately. So. Yep, thank you. There's a close-up of the previous one. So I'm assuming they did the same kind of thing where they were rusted and deteriorated. They took them out and put in matching brick and mortar. And could you go to the next one? And there's an example of the partially removed pin and then some not-so-great brick below. So the idea of our restoration, or the intent of our restoration this year with PJ Spillane as the contractor, would be to remove that brick to get rid of the remaining fire shutter pin housing that's buried in the masonry, and then replace it with matching brick and mortar.
Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, that's what I wanted to see.
Yeah, so this is a close-up of one that we would be keeping. We would restore the mortar joints around this, and then just, if we can clean some of the paint off, we'll clean some of the paint off. But our intent isn't to do any more than just tighten up the joints around any of the good conditioned fire shutter pins. So, and then there's additional examples as we go further of, is an example of brick that was installed where it used to be. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one. This is an example of an infilled one. There's a cracked brick below. My assumption is either due to when they replaced the brick or from the fire shutter pin deterioration over the years. This is an example of what we would be removing. And some of this, we did this as part of a City of Boston exterior wall ordinance review. So on the day of the lift review, there were sections of these, I know, because I was on the lift, there were sections of these that were actually cracked in the sidewall of the housing that faces the masonry opening, actually fell off in my hand. So that's our basic intent, is mostly due to safety or brick damage. This one has both. think this next slide might be the other view. Yeah. So you can see how that plate that returns back towards the window was actually cracked, and with little or no force, it fell right off in our hands. And this one, you can see damaged brick above. I don't think that was due to that rust, but previous damage. And you jump to the next slide, Mary, thank you. This is another one with a partially removed faceplate on the fire shutter pin. So this one we would be proposing to remove and replace with a matching brick. And that might be it. No, a couple more. Yeah. Just additional examples of what, and it's sporadic throughout the building. It's not like they're all clustered in one group, which is good and bad. This is an example of one that's almost completely gone. Mm-hmm. So the only remaining part is the housing that actually wraps the inner brick, or two to three that hold this in place. So our intent isn't to do widespread removal of these. I think there's around 372, if I remember right, on the entire back facade of these buildings. My gut would be, without surveying it up close from swing staging, as we're gonna be doing as we restore the rear elevation, I'm assuming anywhere from the range of 24 to 36 of these might be removed. But again, we will only remove ones that are found broken or severely damaging brick. This is, and I should mention the other part of it, it is being done in conjunction with the partial restoration to the back, restoring it with, you know, matching mortar, sealants around the windows, cleaning up the facade. The upper part needs some brick removal replacement, and all that will be done in accordance with the landmarks.
So, commissioners, I just want to clarify something in my staff comments, and I realized as Matt was going through this that I misunderstood. I thought that the removal of the fire shutter pins were going to be basically just at the upper stories where we saw the first photo with the red circles. I thought only those were going to be removed, but obviously if they're removed throughout the facade rather than just at the upper levels, it'll be more noticeable. So I just wanted to clarify that.
And wasn't that photo with the red circles, if I understood it, wasn't that you were saying that that's where the pintles have been removed already?
I thought that this image showed where the fire shutter pins were going to be removed. Rather than had been removed already.
Yeah. All right. That's what I thought. Okay. Is that the extent of your presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, you know, they seem like such, you know, insignificant little objects. Pintles, I think is what they're called. But they're a huge part of the character defining feature of these buildings because the shutters were, you know, just a major visual element on these buildings, and these symbolize the where shutters once were, the fire shutters were. And we know that there has been issues where, and I think it's the rusting of these things that ends up expanding, is that if I'm understanding what actually happens here, and then that's what forces the brick to be cracking.
Correct.
Yeah. So my point about the importance of these, they're every bit as important as the fire escapes on the buildings. And we're adamant about having applicants retain the fire escapes. And then in one instance, you know, they went ahead and removed one, and we insisted they replace it, put it back. I would like to hear what the other commissioners have to say about it, but I think I would be hesitant to just say, yeah, go ahead and remove whatever ones need to be removed and then stick a new brick in it, rather than if they have to be removed, isn't there a way that we can put back some semblance of what that pintle looked like, you know, so that it represents a, because I don't know if these things are L-shaped and they sort of just take the slot of where a brick is, or if it's a solid piece of metal. I'm not sure what, how much of that brick space did the pintle take up. And so is there a way to visually show that and represent the form of a historic pintle, but make it, you know, make it be a, obviously a new one, so that we don't have to have a, you know, broken tooth, so to speak, there. We can keep the rhythm of these going along the sides of the windows.
Sure. And I have a couple in my office. I could run and grab them if you want to see them, but they actually have like a flat housing that lays in the bed joint of the masonry. And then depending on the type, it either wraps the entire brick unit and then has a tab going back to the second wife, or some of them actually go back in as far as the third wife of brick. So there's varying types. I've seen at least two or three, I think, in the time that I've been working in and around Boston. Yeah, I would love to come up with the way to preserve them, you know, or fix them in place. I just don't know of a way to do so.
Yeah, I mean, to me, obviously, they're not going to be needed to hold the weight of a shutter door anymore. So that structurally, they won't have to be so, you know, go back into the building and the brick, adjacent bricks, like they are, they were. So they could be something that's just more of a surface treatment that visually represents it rather than structurally represents it.
Yeah,
I don't know, you know, that would have to be something that, you know, you'd have to research and work that out.
I'm a little hesitant to replicate or try to replicate what was there, because it's never going to look the same, I don't think. It's going to be a different material. Even if you try to mimic the original shape, I just worry about that.
Well, so then, and some of these are so far gone, then you would be in support of having them just removed and a new brick put in?
I would, as long as the brick matched. Which has to happen over time anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, some of them look like they're pretty far gone. Some of them look like maybe they could, that the pintle itself was in good shape. It's just that the reaction that it had to the adjacent bricks.
Certainly anything that could be restored, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, if we can restore them and
but not to replicate them or try to, yeah.
Okay.
That's just my thought.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point. So we could propose that. John, do you have anything that you want to add to that before I open it up?
I think just maybe to pick up on that point, which I think feels reasonable to me, but does then beg the question of, is there anything that could be done while you're doing the rest of the work, which would be fairly simple, even if it's a matter of just putting a protective coating on the exterior, what's visible of the pintles, to help stabilize them for at least a few more years in the future. I don't know if that's a reasonable thing to do, if there's a way of doing that that's effective, or I understand that the problem is not what you see, it's what you don't see. But just to, I would defer and wonder if there's anything that's reasonable that could.
Yeah. So it sounds like the course of action would be to investigate how to restore as best we can and stabilize, rather than just remove and insert an empty brick in its place. And I didn't hear, you know, there was nothing presented about ways in which, you know, they could be improved upon so that they don't continue that decay and rust that would then impact the surrounding bricks. And I don't know, I'm not an engineer, so I don't know what possibilities there are, but maybe there is some way to seal them or encase them in some substance that would, you know, retard the further rusting of them. So, all right. So let me open it up to public comment. And Mary, if you can throw that script up again for me.
I'll throw it up, but I don't think there's anybody else here besides us. But yes, I guess for consistency, you should read it in.
Us chickens here, right?
If I could add just one more thing, you know, and the intent really is to only take the ones off that that are physically broken on the outside, that the face piece could fall off. I know there are some clear penetrating chemicals that may assist in it, but I don't know that it will actually stop it. I know tightening up the mortar joints on the housing and the surrounding of these pins or pintles would definitely improve things. And you can see some of them are in pristine condition. So
yeah,
I don't know if it was different types of metal or different press or what the difference is, but you know, some are in great shape, and that's truly our intent, is to just keep it as historic as possible and just take off what is basically a safety concern. So I don't think we could weld it, because the underlying rust is, we'd have to almost remove, without being the mason contractor himself, I mean, I would assume we'd have to remove 3 to 4 bricks all the way around this and then pull that whole housing out. So we'd almost be doing, we'd be doing more invasive work trying to save and then restore it and then reinstall it, if that was the route that we had to take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would be curious about what the other commissioners feel about that, if they feel that it's important enough to retain them such that maybe more bricks would have to be removed, such that so that repair work can take place, and then obviously put the bricks back, or certainly bricks that match the existing, and then the mortar color that would match the existing might be the way to go. But I do, so I mean, I don't know. I would like to, it sounds like we're leaning towards a denial without prejudice here, as far as our determination. And it sounds like I'd like to hear some more information about how these can be restored. What are some of the means that could be used to retard this process? I'm sorry, I want to ask again, is part of your restoration, are you repointing the building?
It's partial repointing.
Just part, yeah. Wherever it needs it. Yeah. Okay. Because I was going to say, if you're going to be repointing the whole building, that the other pintles that might not be affecting the brick might want to be looked at to see if there's a stabilization that could be done to them right now before they start to affect the brick.
We will be reviewing all of them up close.
As well, okay.
Building. They're going to access it with swing staging or a mass climber. So we'll have the chance to review all of them up close.
Yeah. So I guess one of the things, and Lynn, you know, to get back to your comment about not replacing them, if they have to go in and remove some more, you know, several bricks to get to the whole piece, you know, whatever the size of this thing is, it won't need to be that large and invasive any longer, because it doesn't need the pintle doesn't need to reach into the masonry to have structural integrity now. If they're going to do that, is there a way to, you know, cut back on the amount of metal that goes into this building and still just keep the original surface piece of the pintle inserted in a way that's going to keep it in place and it won't fall out, but it still will at least be visible? I think maybe that would be a reasonable compromise. And I understand not putting something in new. It would be difficult to try to disguise it and make it look old, and you know, you'd be fooling the viewer that it wasn't a historic piece.
Would it be worth for us to try to put in like a brown brick instead of a red brick, something that would almost appear to be housing without the pin, obviously, or pintle, but you know, I'm almost just talking out loud here, you know, like a bronze colored or a brown brick that might appear to be one of them from a quick glance.
I would say no to that.
Okay. I just figured I'd throw it out there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your gesture then to have at least the four be a complete set up there visually. Mm. All right, so if there's no other comments, that, and Sarah's not making a comment, I'm surprised that she already leaving.
She's not here.
Oh, she's not here. Not here.
All right. So I will take a vote, or I'd like to hear a motion then to, if we are going to put a denial without prejudice.
I'll make such a motion.
Okay, and second. I guess that's you, John.
Yeah, I will second it.
All right. So Commissioner Karoff, how do you vote? Oh, so the motion is to put a denial without prejudice. Okay, we have a second. So all those in favor will say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. So if you could do a little bit more background work and you know, come to us with some other thoughts about how removing them altogether would be the very, very last resort. You know, we would be much more in favor of a restoration, even if there's a broken piece on it. You know, I'd rather see a semblance of the original pintle versus just an empty space. And again, it would be really, would be helpful if you could show us what this thing looks like so we can get a sense of how far, how big it is and how far it reaches into the brick as well. When you return, so all right.
Will do.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Yep. All right, let's let me get back to the agenda here. All right. That was the one and only
design review.
So we have administrative approvals now. And these are applications that came before the commission staff, and they were approved by the staff with the determination that they met the standards and criteria. So our vote, after I read them in, the motion would be to accept the staff's findings on their acceptance of these applications. So the first is application number 21.0709. 3341 Farnsworth Street, and at all facades restore mortar joints using mortar that matches the historic mortar color joints in terms of color, texture, joint width, tooling, and profile. Selectively replace deteriorated brick as needed with new brick to match the historic in terms of color, texture, size, and profile. Remove copper cornice flashing and replace with new copper replace window sealant joints. Paint and or recoat previously coated metal and steel and concrete. And the next would be application number 21.0755, and that's at 51 Melcher Street. And the work here is at the areas of Melcher Street, Necco Court, and Courtyard facades, replace window perimeter sealant in kind, perform masonry spot repointing and new mortar to match historic in terms of color, texture, profile, joint width and tooling, perform stone sill patching and with mortar to match the historic in terms of color, texture, and profile, and selected brick replacement with new brick to match historic in terms of color, texture, size, and profile. So again, the motion is to accept these, the staff's acceptance of these applications. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, so we'll just take a voice vote. All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, so that's done. Now the next is the ratification of the March 11, 2021 public hearing minutes. I read through them. I didn't see any issues with them. Is there a motion to accept those minutes?
Move to accept the minutes.
All right, and a second?
Second.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. None. All right, staff updates.
Nothing crazy to add. I'll just note that we're moving very close to online applications, which will be wonderful for staff. We don't know exactly when they're going to go live, but we are currently reaching out to testers to test the online system for us. So it looks great. Nick did a wonderful job on it, and we're really excited.
Great.
And any movement on having the placement commissioners for the two slots that are all vacant?
Not to my knowledge. I do know that there was movement on Beacon Hill. I didn't attend the meeting, but I know that Joe and Nick did, and I believe they expressed the need for additional commissioners for 4 points. So hopefully there'll be movement on that soon.
Yeah, I'm wondering now with the new mayor if that's going to kind of put that on the back burner a little bit until she gets up to snuff on running things here. So, all right, just as a curiosity, because we could certainly we can use it.
I know.
All right, so if that's all we have, make a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
All right, a second.
Well, second.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Ta-ta. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
See you
good night. Nice to see you all.
Yeah, you too.
All right, bye.